Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Since it was first described over 100 years ago, Alzheimer's disease has been without an effective treatment. Likewise, the prognosis for recovery from stroke, spinal cord injury, and other neurologic disorders remain stubbornly elusive. Enter Penn State Professor Gong Chen, a professor of biology and the Vern Williman Chair in the Life Sciences. He's involved in some of the most exciting research in the field of brain repair, with the dream of discovering an effective treatment for Alzheimer's disease in his lifetime. Professor Chen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
The first time we talked about brain repair research was 10 years ago. At the time, you said that you were most hopeful about making progress in effectively treating Parkinson's disease, which of course is a less complicated neurological disorder than Alzheimer's disease, the reason being that the region affected is finite. It's the dopamine region of the brain. And Alzheimer's, of course, is more diffuse, yes, more spread out throughout the brain. So first, what progress has been made in the decades since we last talked? And why is your focus on Alzheimer's and not the simpler, perhaps, treatment of Parkinson's disease?
Well, it's a huge progress and probably a huge change for me and probably for the entire field. 10 years ago, I remember I gave a talk about this brain repair and new hope using stem cells. However, over the past 10 years, it has been increasingly clear that transplantation of stem cells into the brain or spinal cord, while they can generate some functional neurons, the number is quite limited. The majority of stem cells will be immunorejected. And even the surviving stem cells, the ability of generating functional neurons are somewhat limited. And those neurons form the new circuit with the existing neurons. The ability is also limited. So a few years after our first meet, we came up with a new idea. If the exogenous stem cells doesn't do the job very well, can we make use of the internal glial cells inside the brain to do neural regeneration?
And that brings us to what you're doing now, which is in vivo reprogramming.
Yes.
Working within the body, not in a petri dish or a test tube, for
exactly.
example. Explain for us, you just mentioned something, glial cells.
Right.
Everyone's heard of neuron cells.
Yes.
But very few people have even heard of glials, and it's something
right.
that is quite important.
Yes.
And quite plentiful in the brain.
Exactly. So our human brain probably have billions of neurons, anywhere 10 to 100 billions of neurons. We have even more number of glial cells, an estimated 10 times more glial cells inside the brain. We don't talk them very often because neurons really have this long axon connecting our different brain and even connect our brain to the spinal cord, connect our brain to the body parts. So the neurons are kind of at the center stage of the past decades or even century. But really, they're these quiet glial cells surrounding neurons.
Very supporting
often,
them.
Yes, the glia is a Greek word meaning glue. So people, when they saw these glial cells, they thought they just gluing the neurons together. So, but now we obviously know glial cells have their own function. And if those glial cells are not very happy, the neurons will have a miserable life because the neuron is really relying upon these glial cells.
So this glial cell, it supplies nutrients and oxygen
yes.
to the neurons. And I understand that after Albert Einstein died in 1955, scientists researched his brain for 30 years and discovered that he had way more glial cells
yes.
than the average person.
I saw that, yes. But from a scientist's point of view, you know, it's more important, at least my own kind of assessment, it's more important the neuron to glial ratio is more critical than, you know, a lot of people nowadays ask me, Dr. Chen, can you make more neurons for me so I can be even smarter? I said, well, you're probably already smart enough. You have like billions of neurons already. It's not like more neurons make you smarter, but how the neurons and the glial cells, the ratio, their balance is probably more important. So I guess the Einstein, I don't want to make too much comment about whether those glial cells exactly make him smarter than others. We still need more study on that.
Well, in 2014, you chaired the first symposium in history in vivo cell conversion in the central nervous system. This really jump-started this new field of so-called regenerative medicine. Give us an idea of how much interest there is in this glial cell work that you're doing.
Yes. So over the past, the stem cells are really at the center stage. And I have to go back and give a little bit of background. In fact, our brain, the human brain, so in 1950s, 60s, or even 70s, people pretty much think our neurons are really come with us. So when we were born, our neurons, majority of them were born. And then if we lost any neurons during our life, then the neurons cannot be replenished. However, in actually the very earliest work was 1960s, wasn't, picked up very much, but late 80s and early 90s, many neuroscientists demonstrate that in the mammalian brain, there are a small number of neural stem cells inside of the brain, particularly in the hippocampus, that's our learning memory center, and also in the lateral ventricles, the subventricular zone. So those neural stem cells can generate new neurons.
So the idea that if you lose your brain cells, they're gone forever isn't exactly true.
Right. However, there's another twist to that. Even though we found that there are discrete places that have neural stem cells that can generate neurons, that overturn the old dogma. But it is increasingly clear that those neurons generated from these adult neural stem cells, their number is limited. They cannot be sufficient to repair the brain when the brain is seriously damaged. So initially, we were very excited that these neural stem cells can generate new neurons. That's 10 years ago. I was so excited when I talked. I said, hey, we're going to, cure the brain with those neural stem cells. But now we know they are limited.
Now, tell us a little bit about the successes you've had to date using these glial cells with repair to the heart, the liver, the pancreas.
Yes. First, let me start with the brain. So now, the different from the stem cell approach that to regulate those discrete place of stem cells, why the glial cells are so exciting? Because glial cells are everywhere in our brain. Everywhere. So any place the brain got injured, even the spinal cord, the entire spinal cord, there are glial cells right there. So now, we have this technology to change those glial cells in any place, right in the injury site, into neurons. Similar thing happens in the brain, in the liver, in pancreas. Now scientists are able to use, for example, in the heart, to change those fibroblasts after a heart attack, change that back into cardiac muscle cells. In the liver, people can change some of the fibroblast cells into liver cells. In the pancreas, they can change those non-insulin secreting cells into the insulin secreting beta cells. So you can now, in several representative organs, including brain, spinal cord, heart, liver, pancreas, using internal cells to generate the type of cell you want without any stem cell transplantation.
And the problem with the stem cell transplantation, as you said earlier, is this immunorejection.
Yes.
And in fact, you did this, scientists did this a decade or more ago with mice where they did see some neuron repair, but unfortunately, 10 weeks out, these mice developed brain tumors.
Yes, because anybody transplant stem cells, the stem cells has the risk of developing into tumor. It's just that there's no way to completely get rid of that possibility. So that is a deficit, but I think the immunorejection could be even worse, that you just don't get enough cells to survive there.
So explain what the advantages are of using these glial cells.
Yes. As I just mentioned, the glial cells, the big advantage is that it is everywhere. So every single neuron is surrounded by glial cells. So then you can imagine in any place inside of the brain or inside of the spinal cord, the neurons died, then they are surrounding glial cells. They can actually divide. So that's a fundamental difference between neurons and glial cells. Neurons die, they cannot divide, they cannot regenerate themselves.
Once they die, they're gone.
Yes, that's why neurons are precious. But the glial cells, they are also quite precious, but they do have the ability to divide. So when glial cells die after injury, their neighboring glial cells will divide, and they can also receive the signal from the dying neurons. The neurons say, oh, I'm dying, save me, help me. The glial says, okay, I'm coming. But, you know, very often the neurons still die. So these glial cells got the signal, they will divide, they form these so-called reactive glial cells to try to contain the damage. So they form the scar, try to prevent the damage spreading. So this is happening everywhere inside the brain, inside the spinal cord, whenever there's an injury or there is neurodegenerative disease, such as Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, ALS. So our idea is, okay, wherever there are neurons dying, we're going to use their neighboring glial cells right there neighboring to the lost neurons to change that directly into functional neurons.
The problem is it's not as if this is just a string of Christmas lights and we're going to add one string and it's all going to connect and work. You need to integrate this glial cell and what it's doing into the whole circuitry of the brain.
Correct. That is obviously a big challenge. However, we are really happy to say that we have already seen a big progress along this functional integration. So in 2014, when we first published the cell stem cell article, we demonstrate using electrophysiology recording that after we convert the glial cell into neuron, if we poke an electrode into the neuron, we can hear the neuron is talking to their surrounding neurons. So they are forming the local circuit. And recently, we have data not published yet that the neurons, after converting from the glial cells, they can send their axon far, far away from their local injury site. In fact, they can go from left brain to the right brain across the midline. They can also project from the cortex to the thalamus or even to the hypothalamus. So the neurons are not only...
Can you control where they go, where they migrate?
Well, that is a great, great question. Right now, we haven't purposely to control them. But I think in theory, there is possibility to do that. Nevertheless, I have been constantly asked by a lot of other scientists, why the neurons you regenerated? How can they really go to other places when they see our exciting data? So I said, well, think about it. How our brain is formed originally during this embryonic brain development stage. So the neurons were created and they are this kind of pioneer axon come out of the neuron, they can travel long. You can go from, Pacific Ocean across, like that, because the axon travel from the brain to the spinal cord comparing to their soma. It's only like about 10 to 20 micrometers. That's a huge distance. They use a lot of those local cues. You know, it means like if I go to Walmart, I'm constantly asked where I'm going. So along the way, I got a lot of cues. So I think, again, this is, my theory.
In theory at this point.
Yes, at this moment. But I think that those axons going along those already laid out axon pathway.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Imagine being able to regenerate healthy, functional neurons after brain injury or repairing brain function for the 5.4 million Americans with Alzheimer's disease and the millions more expected to get it. Professor Gong Chen is leading the Penn State research team that's working on a breakthrough method toward brain repair that could have life-altering implications for those with traumatic brain and spinal cord injuries, Alzheimer's disease, and other neurologic disorders. Well, here's the challenge to me, though. We still don't really know what causes Alzheimer's disease, for example. So
yes.
Even if we can do what you're talking about, reconnect these synapses in our brain, it sounds to me like this might be a stopgap because you're repairing damaged neurons. At the same time, the Alzheimer's disease is progressing. In other words, the damage is going on. You're
yes.
repairing, but you haven't stopped what caused the damage to occur in the first place.
Yes, that is a great point. So for Alzheimer's disease, glad you bring out this is very complicated neurodegenerative disease. And in my personal view, this is not just a disease. It is actually a complicated syndrome. So Alzheimer's disease, whether it is caused by injury or by genetic factors or by viral infection or any...
Or a combination
of those.
Yeah,
a combination of those. But usually they are developing pretty slowly. And we know there is this well-known amyloid beta hypothesis or tau tangle hypothesis. I think they are all very important. Those A beta deposit tau tangles could be the initial factor triggering Alzheimer's disease. But the Alzheimer's disease typically develop in 5 years, 10 years, or sometimes even 20 years. So when a senior, say 70 years old or 80 years old, is diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, we know something is wrong happening 5 years ago, 10 years ago, or even 20 years ago. So the Alzheimer's disease, recently there are a lot of clinical trials, you know, try to stop it or try to treat it, but all fail. I think because it is such a complicated and, lasting for a long time degenerative disease, I personally, really it's my personal opinion, I don't think there is a single silver bullet that one drug, one small molecule, or one big macromolecule would really cure Alzheimer's disease.
In fact, you talk about the need for a cocktail of medications
yes.
and treatments.
Right. So that's what I'm now really advocating to the scientific community. I think of Alzheimer's disease, first of all, it is a neurodegenerative disease. So the neurons degenerated. Therefore, the first thing we need to do in order to treat the Alzheimer's patient is neuroregeneration. We first need to regenerate those neurons that have degenerated. But this is not enough. I'm not going to say our technology, yeah, we can regenerate neurons, so that's it. No, because there's still A beta there. There's still tau tangles there. There's still something else, you know, being
these
damaged
proteins
there.
These proteins that are clumping,
aggregate.
Clumping.
Yes,
and,
the clumping, the aggregates.
And
we
problems.
Need to remove that. So I think we need to combine our neural regeneration technology together with those A beta antibodies or tau antibodies or some other drugs to reduce their aggregation and try to clean them up. So I think those are all great technologies.
Explain how you inject or get these glial cells into the brain to begin this regeneration that you're talking about.
Actually, now we have two different technologies. One is called gene therapy. So gene therapy is great for a local injury. For example, concussion, you know, Super Bowl, you know, have this bang, you know, and then maybe have some kind of injury. If that injury is local, I think ideally we can inject our neurotranscription factor called
through brain surgery.
But this is not the big brain surgery you are thinking. It's actually a microsurgery. We only need to drill perhaps only 1 millimeter, a small hole, tiny small hole on the skull, and then we use like maybe 200 micrometer needle, very small fine needle like your hair, you know, and then inject into the injury site. So no worry, it's not like big neurosurgery. It's tiny, tiny hole. And you can actually, if the injury site is slightly bigger, you can drill maybe 3 or 4 different holes and inject this viral particle, express the neural factor in the glial cells. So when the glial cells expressing these neural factors, the neural factors we call neural D1, it can flip the neuronal gene, turn it on, and then...
Turn
on neuronal gene in a glial cell, and turn off the glial genes. And then the glial cell, hey, why my neuronal gene is turned on? Why my glial gene is turned off? Then I'm not glial cell anymore. They are neurons. So that's how we use gene therapy to turn them.
And can you ensure that they will survive?
Oh, yes. So, of course, during this conversion process, there are some of the cells might die. However, our neural D1 so far is very highly efficient. They can convert about 90% of glial cells into neurons. So that's very highly efficient. And we have data shown that after neural D1 treatment in a local injury site, we can regenerate more than 80 or 90% of neurons.
So the other thing you're working on is a chemical therapy. First, you've got this gene therapy. The chemical therapy would involve the creation basically of a pharmaceutical, of a pill that will do the same thing.
Yes. So while the gene therapy is great and the first technology we developed, but it has its limitation. Imagine Alzheimer's disease. Are you going to drill a hole everywhere in the brain and inject viral particles everywhere? I can't imagine that. So that's why several years ago, even before we completely published our first work, I started to think, gene therapy is great. Whenever you have a small focal injury, you can really use gene therapy to regenerate neuron there to recover the function. But, for Alzheimer's disease, or let's say a large brain stroke,
that affects a large region of the brain.
We need a drug therapy. So we really tested several hundreds of different combinations. And lucky enough, we found a formula. We use a cocktail of small molecules that can similarly turn on the neuronal genes inside the glial cells and turn human glial cells directly into functional neurons. Of course, that's in Petri dish because I'm not allowed to do human brain yet.
You said Petri dish, but have you also not done this with monkeys or with other primates, non-human primates?
Yes, so that is actually, thank you for mentioning that. We are currently also, for the gene therapy, we are already collaborating with other scientists to work on monkeys, and we can indeed convert the glial cells into neurons. For the drug therapy, for the small molecules, we are not there yet because we just recently published this small molecule work.
Now, of course, monkeys don't get Alzheimer's disease, so you're creating something that approximates that disease. But my question is, have you seen restoration of motor function or of brain function from the treatment?
Yes. So we have successfully using gene therapy first in mouse and also then in rat, in the rodent animals. So we injured, for example, in mice. So the motor cortex that control the forelimb movement, we purposely induce a stroke, injure the motor cortex. We saw the mouse forelimb movement is impaired. And then we use either control viral particles or our neural D1 we inject. We can essentially rebuild the brain circuit in the motor cortex, and then we show the fine motor move function is significantly improved.
Wow. Your goal is to find a cure for Alzheimer's in your lifetime. So I want to get back to that first question. Why are you focusing on this more complicated disease, Alzheimer's, rather than something that's a little simpler, like Parkinson's disease?
Well, actually, we are doing Parkinson's disease. It's not like we are not doing that. So we are doing stroke. I have now several groups, one group focusing on stroke, and that's so far we got a significant functional improvement, so really advanced very fast. We were working on Alzheimer's disease for a number of years now, but to be honest, Alzheimer's disease is really difficult. The reason why I mention Alzheimer's disease as one of my major goals because it is so difficult. Because the whole world, the NIH, you know, the different government, the industry put so much money, so much effort, still not find a cure. So I want to take Alzheimer's disease as a bigger goal, you know, try to cure it.
And the reality is that 36 million people worldwide are suffering from Alzheimer's disease. In this country, there are 5.4 million with a projection
yes.
of 16 million by 2050.
Yeah. Right.
I'm surprised, you know, when I read those numbers, I'm surprised that the NIH sponsored $504 million worth of research into Alzheimer's disease versus investing $5 billion in cancer research.
Yes.
Why isn't Alzheimer's disease getting more research dollars?
Well, yeah, I think the cancer research has traditionally got a lot of attention. Of course, you know, cancer, you know, is really a terrible, not really, also, you know, not disease, but, you know, people say it a disease anyway. Because Nixon, Richard Nixon, have this
cancer.
Yeah, war on cancer. So really substantially increased the funding for cancer. So that's a tradition. Alzheimer's disease, I think people, not like they don't pay attention to it, but I think they were a lot of unknown things. You know, the brain is so complicated. Everybody said the brain is going to be the last cause or to be completely correct. And I think that's right. But recent years, I think former President Obama, you know, had this initiative, put $100 million to Alzheimer's disease research. And recently, we also see NIH funding increasing because this become more and more a big burden.
And here in State College, your research, by the way, is funded by a retired developer, Skip Smith, who has contributed $5 million to your efforts. How important
yes.
is that funding, and what are you doing with it?
Oh, that's really a tremendous help because, you know, before this big donation, I was really worrying about funding. I was writing grants, if not every day, but at least one-third of my time to one-half of my time writing grant, because currently the funding rate is about 10%. So you can write 10 grants, only one of them got funded. So I had quite a big lab. So to keep everybody survive, you know, I have to just keep writing. So when I heard from Skip Smith, who decided to have that donation, really is a tremendous help, particularly because our technology is still new. A lot of people still have a lot of doubt. So now I can focus develop this technology.
I think you said, quote, "We have the tools and the talent to achieve breakthroughs in Alzheimer's disease, but we need the resources to make it a reality."
Yes. And the $5 million can probably help me go through 3 to 4 years.
So how far off are clinical human trials of what you're working on right now?
Everything we are doing now, regenerating neurons in the brain, in the spinal cord, you know, regenerating GABAergic neurons for Huntington's disease, dopaminergic neurons for Parkinson's disease, GABA neuron and glutamatergic neuron for stroke, for Alzheimer's disease. Say, if we can make our research to not only advance the basic understanding of the brain function, but also to treat the human disease, I think that's much more important. So we are really working toward that. In terms of clinical trial, the lab research itself can never be directly used to treat a patient. So Penn State really helped me to set up a private company, and we are raising money. We are hopefully go to work with other companies like big pharmaceutical companies who really advance this to clinical trial. My optimistic timeline. Give me 10 years. I'm going to cure it.
10 years. Well, here's wishing you every success as you continue this important work. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Gong Chen, a Penn State professor of biology and the Vern Williman Chair in the Life Sciences. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.